This show is sponsored by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Support this podcast and get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus when you go to HuluPlus.com/Joey. That's HuluPlus.com/Joey. And by DollarShaveClub.com. Get high-quality razors sent to your door every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/church. That's DollarShaveClub.com/church. Or just go to joeydiaz.net and click on the DollarShaveClub.com banner.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. It's Monday, August something. It don't even fucking matter no more. Get up. It's a Monday. Oh, shit. You're fired up. Your balls are itchy. You got bad fucking breath. Get up. Brush your teeth in the shower. Scrub those fucking nuts. Somebody's gonna sniff them today. You know what I'm saying? It's that type of fucking morning, motherfuckers. Enough is enough already. 2 weeks till Labor Day. One more week to college. College football next Thursday. It's that time of the year, Lisa. I don't wanna hear no fucking bullshit, cocksucker.
Never.
She got the hood. Hit it, Lisa. Oh, shit. I used to listen to this shit on two ludes and about 55,000 fucking grams of Corky's. Loud as shit. Look, get what? Stop it. Now she's bulletproof. She keeps that pussy clean. Oh, shit. Turn that shit off, Lisa. Yeah, what's happening? Welcome to the church of what's happening. Now we're back, bitches. Lisa Ayat and a flying fucking Jew in the house. What's happening, baby boy?
I had a great weekend.
I missed you, cocksucker.
I missed you.
I wanted to rub your little head today, you little fucking, with your little Barnabas Collins hairdo and shit. What's happening, baby? Talk to you, Uncle Joey.
Nothing, man. I had a great weekend, but I was thinking about something because you did a lot of comedy this weekend, and I was just I went to see a comedy show this weekend. I forgot how much I loved it, and you feel a lot better, like, when you laugh, when you have a good time, and, like I was
What would you rather do, Lee? Take a fart to the face or go on stage?
To do comedy?
Yeah, one time. Think about it, all right?
There you go.
I
don't want to do comedy.
Just do it one time.
I have
just
no
to
interest.
See that world, and we'll talk about it on the podcast.
I have no interest.
You teach me how to edit for 1 hour, and we'll go. How about that? Because we were talking about that, how people think that, you know, they could do what other people do. Just try it.
It's
going to make you so
much of a better man.
Listen, 20 years ago, did you not bungee jump? I'm not a bungee jumper, but I bungee because I overcame a fear. Do you follow what I'm saying to you? Just try it, brother. I'm not breaking your balls. I mean, you don't like farts to the face, and you're scared.
No one likes farts to the face.
Everybody loves farts to the face. It's metal. You know, why go to Vietnam? You don't got to bring home a medal. Hey, thank you for digging. That was a fucking... I listened to 15 to 20 minutes of that podcast with Duncan Trussell.
Yeah.
And guys, I had to turn it off.
Why?
It fucking wired me up too much.
Really?
Yeah. I don't like talking about that shit. I don't like to repeat that kind lingo to people, but it fired me up. But I can only do this on here. Like, I wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, I love Duncan, and I knew we were going to end up talking about death, you know, and how people respond to death and react to death. I'm sorry. And, you know, everybody's different. Butch Escobar sends his love.
Oh, great.
All right. Butch Escobar is a comic in San Jose. Cool motherfucker. I met him through Edwin San Juan and all those guys. He's this Mexican dude with the Sinbad, the fucking sailor beard that's funny as fuck. He's just a new guy, the comedy, you know. He's just getting his stripes on, 6 or 7 years, and his mom passed.
Oh, that's so
bad. About
2 years
ago.
Oh, okay.
And you met the dad, you know, and then I remember talking, and the dad was, and then me and Lee went up to San Jose to fuck around for a few days, and we met the dad. We had dinner with him like mm-hmm. 3 or 4 times, you know. And it was funny how the dad was dating, and he was happy, and he moved on with his life.
Mm-hmm.
So Thursday, when I was listening to the podcast, I was out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to the podcast, and I listened to the death stuff, and it fucked with me, you know, a little bit. It brought me back to those feelings of, and for some reason, Butch Escobar's father came into my head. Like, usually when a spouse dies, the other spouse dies within a year, You just get over grief with Will. Not that motherfucker. He put mousse on his hair, put a nice shirt on, and he went out and started dating again.
Yeah.
You know, and he lived this life, and he's very involved in his community. He negotiates for unions and stuff like that. He's just a neat guy. Neat fucking Spanish dude, and he hangs out at Original Joe's. When somebody hangs out at Original Joe's, that's a bad gangster right there. Like, the other night we're there, and I'm sitting there, and after the show in San Jose, what's his name? My agent Justin goes, "You want to go get dinner?" And I wasn't hungry, you know, but he had never gone. He said he only had breakfast there.
Oh, okay.
So I said, "Do me a favor. Let me go upstairs and roll a joint. I'll come back down, puff it. You know, you puff right outside the Fairmont Hotel in that little alley."
Yeah.
Fucking cool town, San Jose, right? So I puffed the joint. We walk over to Original Joe's. Quarter after 12.
Oh, wow.
So we walk in. You know how it is, the quarter after 12. And it's just another fucking night over there. They're just serving dinners. Sinatra's on the jukebox. We sit down. We order. And also the bartender goes, "Last call for alcohol." So right away I go, "Oh my God, maybe Mr. Escobar is at the bar." And I turn around, and within 5 minutes, Mr. Escobar walks this way. And we gave him a hug. He asked about Lee, you know. So that's it. That's why I was thinking about death and how people reacted to death. Some people let it get overwhelmed with it. And some people go, "Okay, they're dead. There's nothing I can do. I missed them. I loved them. I'm going to move on with my life. I'm going to go put a nice shirt on and shave my cock and go out there and try it again." You know what I'm saying? Because that's what she'd want me to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the other person would usually want you to do.
That was a crazy podcast because we've done, that was the fifth one. And some of my podcasts, some people try to be funny, and it's, but that one was like kind of like one of these podcasts, but in front of people. And it was, that was the first time I had heard Duncan since his cancer thing. So it was crazy.
I love Duncan. I love that Duncan's back in my life. Out here especially. I feel like I have more family when Duncan's back in my life, you know? So it's very weird when you're around UFC fighters. They're never the type of guys to go, "Hey, man, I'll break his fucking heck," or whatever. You know why?
Why?
Because they're confident.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to talk about it. They're not like me, the insecure little fat fucks. They're confident. That podcast is to let you know how confident we are in our comedy. We don't always have to talk about fucking comedy. We don't always have to try to be fucking cute. Nothing bothers me more when I'm trying to have a conversation with a comic and he's trying to be fucking cute. There's always a third wheel and he's trying to chime in to prove that he's funny. When men are talking, if you're a man, you don't have to fucking prove that you're funny. Just talk to me. And so many times that we have conversations and somewhere in the line, fucking something funny comes out.
Yeah. But it doesn't always have to be funny.
It always doesn't have to be funny. Stop trying. That's what a lot of people do. And that's what that podcast did the other night. We weren't trying to be funny.
No.
We were just telling you the stories of how we handled that death.
Yeah. Now, it seems Duncan's great, so this isn't anything against Duncan. But on paper, you probably shouldn't like Duncan, it would seem. It seems like he likes a lot of stuff that you find annoying.
Well, we have the both common denominator, heart. And Duncan got a lot of balls.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got to the store, Duncan would show up on Sundays at open mic night. You know, here I was trying to work on jokes, and everybody was trying to be a monologist. And Duncan would go up there with that creepy fucking doll, whatever his name was, Mr. Boo, whatever his fucking
little
name.
Little Hobo, I think.
And he'd do "Wish You Were Here." But the whole thing about a stand-up that matches up with life is that when you commit, beautiful things happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times I went on stage, like Saturday night in San... Friday night in Boston was fucking amazing. If you came to the Wilbur Theater Friday, I love you. If you came to the show Saturday, I fucking love you. I love people... When people go out, I love it. I love when people go out and fucking try to laugh and all this shit. The Wilbur Theater was off the chain.
Yeah.
Some motherfucker showed up with those Rogan Diaz for president signs. I nearly lost my fucking mind. You know, Boston is Boston. Boston's always going to be Boston. You could always count on Boston to be fucking Boston. And that's why I've been going there since I was fucking 19.
Yeah.
You understand me? When I first met my first person from Boston, when I first saw fucking Bernie Carbo tie that fucking game up, when I saw John Havlicek set a pick about around three black guys and David Collins made the layup, I understood what fucking Boston was about. I understood when I seen the Bruins fucking play hockey. I understood when you see the interviews and the Irish, when fucking they put Tiant, you know, so... let's not even go to the other end of it. I just understand Boston. They're in my, you know what I'm saying? So I was walking around. First of all, we're at the hotel where the Yankees are staying.
Yeah.
I'm upstairs stoned thinking somebody's going to bomb this fucking hotel. Then number two, I'm thinking somebody's, the domestic violence is going to be at an all-time high in Boston. Irish bitches are going to get beat up this weekend in Southie. The UFC is in town and fucking the New York Yankees are in town. How angry are fucking Boston people? They're pissed that the Yankees are in town. Now the UFC is going to fuel that fucking fire. How many people got bitch slapped Friday night, you think, in Boston?
Tons.
And how many people got bitch slapped Saturday fucking night? And a couple people got beat up last night and shit because it's Sunday, the Lord's Day. That's an automatic, you know what I'm saying? What's up, Lee cocksucker?
Nothing, man. You were saying, how is San Jose?
San Jose is just a beautiful little town, but we did 94.9 Summer Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I came off those two fucking blasting shows Saturday, Friday night. For people didn't know, the show ended at 12. I was in my hotel room by 10 after 12. The wake-up call was at 4 a.m. I was in a cab by 4:30. Showered, balls, packed the whole fucking thing. People, because I packed before I go to fucking sleep. In a cab, I get to the airport, and I put in for upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
When you wake up, American Airlines shoots you an email and says if you got upgraded. When I woke up, there was no upgrade. I was pissed. I was like, I might cancel this flight and never fly American Airlines, them nasty motherfuckers. But guess what happened?
What?
When I got to the airport, I went in priority fucking lane because I got the little card.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in priority lane. I pressed in the thing, and all of a sudden I looked at the two plane tickets. And one plane ticket was my regular seat, but the second plane, because I had to take a connecting flight, was a first class ticket. And I was like, oh shit, things are going to get ugly from Dallas to San Jose like a motherfucker. And when I went to the window, she goes, Mr. Diaz, you're probably going to get first class on this flight, but they won't award it till you get to through the security line.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, it will be official. You pretty much got it, though. You're number three in this three seats. So by the time I got to the window, they had a thing on, Mr. Diaz, come to the desk. So bang, I banged it out first class the whole fucking way. Oof. I love American Airlines. So it was great. I drank an amaretto and milk. You know me, like a half a fucking fag, like I usually do. I had a little egg breakfast. I watched 42.
How was it?
Not bad. You know. I mean, I knew it was about a black baseball player. They called him nigga 1,000 times, but it was great to see. You know what I'm saying? I mean, no shit. I'm going to go there. I'm going to hear nigga more in Django. You know what I'm saying? So what the fuck?
Yeah.
But it was good. I enjoyed it. And that's it. It was just a great weekend. You know, it was weird Saturday night. I ate some shit because I wasn't prepared. You know, it's amazing. I was telling Rogan, when I don't go on stage prepared, in those big venues, I don't do well because I talk fast and I step on my lines. And I'm not really a monologist. I don't write jokes like normal people, so it's kind of weird. So when I went out there, I stumbled. I went out there with a joke about breaking my toe in yoga.
Okay.
And it didn't really go anywhere. And I just took it dirty, and then they liked it, but I could tell they were apprehensive at that time. I had to win them over. But you know what? It was a great experience for me. Just being up there with Mike Epps and Angela Johnson and fucking Russell Peters is a great guy.
Really? Everyone says that.
Russell Peters is one of those fucking guys that you're like, you know, I don't know. He's a Hindu. I don't know, but he's fucking smooth and cool and just a sweetheart. And what I like about Russell Peters, he helps out a lot of friends of mine. He helps them out. Listen, when a big comic touches you on the shoulder and says they want to go out with you. I've been going out with Joe since 97,
mm-hmm.
when nobody knew who the fuck Joe was. Okay, it was me, Joe, and Chris McGuire. When nobody knew who the fuck Joe was, Joe would get into arguments at the Miami Improv with some chick. I mean, it was fucking amazing, you know, because they would see Joe Gorelli from News Radio. I learned a lot. And all of a sudden, he'd show up, and he'd be buck wild talking about chicks getting fucked. And they'd go, you know, where's the News Radio act? And that's what I learned about what people think about you on TV.
Yeah.
When you're on TV, people really think that, you know. And then it was just really weird. I've known Joe. Now Joe sells out a month in advance. It's easy to go on the road with Joe. But we were fucking flying Southwest and shit, meeting him to Vegas when I first started fucking around with Joe. So I've seen the build. We both built our careers together. And I don't mind working. I don't mind opening up for Joe. I've learned fucking more. It's a college education. I got 6 college educations in comedy from the store. But you know what? After seeing your eyes saying that, you really a fan of comedy, Lee.
Yeah.
Give it a try. One time, just so you see that world. Where's I Want to Be Around? It's Monday. What the fuck's going on here today? Get up, drink some coffee, take an Alpha Brain, do some push-ups. Do what you need to do. It's Monday. You wrote your goals, right?
Absolutely.
What the fuck? You been swimming lately?
I have to work all day, but so I'm swimming in my mind. But I am eating better. I'm trying that, so.
I wanna be around. A little something for my mom today. The ladies in the world. When somebody breaks your heart, somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true. What are you laughing about?
Somebody tweeted at me this morning to look at the comments on this video. All of them are about the church, and some Tony Bennett fans are getting mad. Because people are saying, like, Momo and Cocksucker, and some of them are getting mad.
What are you doing? We're taking over this shit. LSD. Fucking tremendous.
That's awesome. So I was talking after the show on Saturday, and a lot of people always talk to me about, oh, you're so lucky, and I am lucky to be doing this. But I was thinking about it after the show. 2.5 years ago, before we met, I applied to Best Buy and a pizza place because I wasn't making enough money to support myself, and neither of them got back to me. Like, I was doing that math you do where you're like, all right, I get paid next Friday. I have $80 to make it through the next week. And I'm not in a place where I can call my parents. I mean, I could, but they don't really have the money to give me. And the day I met you, I had to cancel an interview at a telemarketing place. And like, we met and we started doing the Matt Flavor videos, and he gave me like $100 a week, and that was everything, because like $100 a week untaxed is it makes everything. But it was crazy to think like 2.5 years later we're doing this. And like, I was telling the girl I was with, and it was like, I hadn't thought about it for a while, but I had forgotten, like, I was trying to be a pizza delivery guy at night after work 2 years ago, and it's crazy how time flies. And it was crazy going, like, because they treated me nice at the comedy club, and they gave me a table, and Tony Hinchcliffe was very nice, and it was a... It's crazy how that happens in such a short amount of time.
Lee, we work hard.
Yeah.
We work hard, Lee. You know, when you're running with me, we run. We run. When we did the video in New York, I could see there was times you were scratching your head going, what the fuck? I just want to go back to a pizza place. I don't think I want to do this. But I knew you were a tough kid. I knew that you, something about you had heart. I could tell. You had a little bit of heart. Your videos were great. We went from no visibility to fucking, wow, cats and people getting insulted at Target and fucking, you know, it went something. Then we took a chance with a documentary. Listen, there's a corny thing, you know, luck is opportunity meets something, isn't it? Something like that. And yeah. In this case, it really, it was the same for me, Lee. 2.5 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I had no fucking idea. I was doing a podcast. Everybody was new to a podcast. The thing is that what I want people to understand is that we took a chance. And I want you to fucking take a chance every day, man. Who gives a fuck? You fail? Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck? It's if you don't do something when you have a fucking problem. It's when you don't fucking try that you have a problem. But you're going to fail 1,000 fucking times. I'm 50. I'm just starting to see the light. What do you think? I was rocking and rolling 10 years ago. But I remember starting to do comedy and selling cars. Selling fucking cars, getting up at 7 in the morning after you just got home at 12:30 at night, 1 in the morning, going home. And then there used to be a publication, it was made out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
John Fox and his wife used to make a magazine, and I got no reason to lie to people. I got no fucking reason to lie to people about this shit. And it was articles about comedians, and in the back they had the guide to all the clubs in the country with their phone numbers, like state by state, Alabama, Arkansas, you know, Alaska, fucking, they had them all in order. And you looked at these clubs, and I would go to these places and bomb at night. Lee, I would go to, in Denver in 95, 94, when I came back from New Jersey to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I had basically 12 minutes, and I had been doing comedy for 4 years and wasting my time. And I really, really got involved with it. Like, I really put my mind to it. And I was starting to see little results. Like, I was doing 9 minutes one night, 11 minutes. But I was out every night, Lee. So I had to get up in the morning, sell cars on 104th Street in Thornton. This is in Colorado. And then at night, do comedy. In the midst of all this, that testicle testament when I wanted to kill my wife and all that anger was going through my fucking heart.
Yeah.
I was doing that too. So it wasn't like a happy-go-lucky time, like, oh my God, let's go do comedy. It was driving to a gig crying because I want to kill my wife because she won't let me see my daughter, not having any fucking dough.
Yeah.
Like, not having any fucking dough. Scamming still.
You said you would go to shows because they gave you free dinner.
They give you free dinner. El Torito gave you free dinner. How many places gave you a free coupon? They gave you the appetizers. You knew you could wheel and deal. Hey, bro, listen, I got this coke coming in. Let me give you $50 now. I had a week to play with your $50. I knew I could wheel and deal, you know, to get tomorrow's meal because I had to pick up Jackie the next day and I had no money. I mean, that's a complete different fucking savage. There's people who do comedy who got regular jobs and they get out at night and they got money in the bank. But then there's people, a lot of comics, you know, go through it, that they have a day job and one day they go, fuck it. The only way to get better at comedy is to take the safety net out and to hang there like fucking Marcel Marceau on a fucking string with a bicycle, you know? And that's how you get good, when you take a chance.
Yeah.
Anybody could do comedy and have a fucking job, you know? Anybody. I have 1,000 friends that will never get to that next level because they always hold on to a job. That's it. That means you have no confidence. I love you to death. I love what you're doing. But that next level, that next fucking dive when your commitment is shown on stage, and that's what I'm talking about, Duncan. Duncan and me have nothing to get along about. Duncan and me have two things in common. Our love for drugs and seeing the fucking devil, and our love for taking chances.
Mm-hmm.
Our love for going on stage and doing something different. You know him especially. A fucking doll. What was the guy's name?
Isn't it Little Hobo?
Little Hobo doing Wish You Were Here, moving his fucking mouth. And some people are joining in laughing, and some people like me are going, what the fuck's going on? You know, in the back of my mind, I was doing blow. So that was my love for Duncan. Then I found out he had heart. The kid's all heart.
The oh, yeah, he's down. He's very
the
nice.
Kid's down. The kid's down. Duncan Trussell is down. I don't like to hang out with nobody who ain't down. Mm-hmm. And he's down. That's the same thing you had. You know, man, we can't describe the ride to people that we've had. People would never believe it.
Yeah.
And I had a great time doing Beauty and the Beast with Felicia Michaels. We just weren't pushing that realm.
Yeah.
That's all it was. We just weren't pushing that realm. You know, just wasn't getting there. It happens sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And this came along, and this is exactly what the fuck I like. Craziness. This is crazy. This is why I could talk. I've never had this. Nobody ever had. This is the luckiest thing we've ever had in our lives. And they throw us in jail, Lee. What are we going to do? They throw us in fucking jail. I can't say that I want to eat Obama's wife's asshole. I can't say that. You're going to throw me in fucking jail. Throw me in fucking jail. But that's not what this is about.
Yeah.
This is the best thing that ever happened to this country. This is letting little people know that they still have a fucking voice. I don't care if I was a fucking gazillionaire on a TV show. I'd still be doing this. Because I would never want people to confuse my fucking character with who the fuck I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
I never want people to get away from this. I'm never going to change from this. I don't give a fuck what you give me. This is who the fuck we are. And nobody ever, people get $3 in their pocket, all of a sudden they gotta live up to what the fuck they're supposed to be. We work, Lee. We work, Lee.
Yeah.
We work, Lee. You know, you call me at all hours of the day and I'm on a desk. You know what I'm saying? If I'm not on the desk, I'm holding a fucking baby, taking an ear beating from my wife, which I don't mind, but that's what life is about. When have you called me? I'm in a bar jumping up and down. Tell the truth.
Never.
In 2-3 years. You ever call me? I'm in a bar jumping up and down? I'm here with my Frank, and nothing happens in a bar when you're jumping up and down, dog. You go to a bar to pick up a freak, stab a motherfucker, and that's it. You're jumping up and down with your buddies on a Friday and Saturday. You're wasting your fucking time. Look at me. There was a band. They were rocking. I don't give a fuck, all right? I got albums at the house. I got albums at the house, cocksucker.
Oh, that's terrible.
The fuck?
Oh, we actually never talked about this. What did you... When I wrote to you, and I think until the CD happened, it might not have seemed real. But what did you expect to happen?
One of the biggest problems people have is they think they can do everything on their own. They think they can fucking control the world.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking hate Sammy the Bull Gravano, but in one of his books, he wrote a great chapter about you could do so much on your own. But someday, you gotta join somebody. You could do so much on your own, and someday you could do. I was stuck. I could write blogs. I could write comedy. I could do so many things, but I was horrible with the camera and the editing and the computer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that for me to grow, I needed people to look inside me. I needed people to see me going to the vet and see me going to acupuncture and see me going to the weed store. And now we understand each other. I'm on stage talking some nonsense because I didn't even know what I was talking about on stage. When I came out here, it was different. It was different for me. Now I understand comedy more. But I always knew it was like 24/7 that once people seen behind the fucking doors of my house and me talking to my wife and me fucking around with you, that we were going to get this party started. And I was right.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's about. That's why I never sent comedy tapes to nobody. For years, bookers would always... There was a fucking guy in Houston, Texas named Mark Babbitt who thought he was the end-all, be-all. He was very good at booking comedy, but like everything else in this business, it went to his head. He thought he was fucking the guy from San Francisco, booking big shows, but he was borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. But he had this... this power thing, like a lot of these fucking douchebags have in comedy at these clubs in the small level. And I'm telling you guys, now at 50, and now if you're doing comedy for 20 years, all that shit, the little clubs, the little level, it doesn't matter. Those people don't fucking matter. They come on to you like they matter and they know about comedy. And if you don't do it their way, you're not going to work ever again in their life. Those people, if they knew it, they wouldn't be fucking stuck in some bum fuck fucking town managing a comedy club. And I've seen it 1,000 times where I told these guys to suck my dick and they actually raised their hand to me like, oh yeah, you'll never work again. Bitch, here I am and where the fuck are you, motherfucker? Let's spark this number out of respect, right? So Mark Babbitt told Freddie Soto, God bless his soul, that he wanted to hire me, but he wanted to see a tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Freddie, I ain't sending the guy a tape.
Why not?
Just, I'm not sending the guy a tape. You want to hire me, what's the problem? What's the drama? What's the fucking drama? But every guy that you give $3 to, he thinks he's a manager or something. He's got to get that lick on you. Guess what I did?
What?
I sent him a tape. A blank tape.
Really?
And he hired me. He told me the tape was great. It wasn't about watching the tape, guys. It was about me sending the tape, the power thing. You don't know how many comedy clubs I've called, and they said, yeah, we'll hire you. They know who the fuck I am. Send the tape. You're never going to get that tape. Then they would call me back and go, where's the tape? And I'd say, I'm not sending it. Then eventually they hire me.
He sent a blank tape.
Blank fucking tape.
Oh, it was great. I loved it.
And I did it here in Hollywood. A lot of people in Hollywood, we want to put together a CD for comedy, wants to send a tape. All right, I'd send you a blank fucking tape. Chelsea Handler used to send her standing up, and then at the end, her getting fucked on a washing machine. Remember a couple of years ago, they tried to blackmail her?
No.
And some club owners thought, like, oh, she put it on a mistake. No, she didn't make no mistake, you fucking idiot. That's why she's on E, because she's got a mind.
So on her comedy tape at the end, she'd put her like a sex video?
She had like a little tape of her getting fucked on a washing machine. So the guy that edited it thought that she had left it on there by mistake and all that. She knew what she was doing the whole time. She was sending that tape out across the comedy clubs.
Jesus.
I've got one for you. Then you wonder why the girl's working on me. Not because she gives blowjobs, because somewhere in her mind she became that fucking creative and overlooked the conversation. It's brilliant. Sometimes you gotta do that, but that's the power move, people. Don't ever get caught. Tell them to suck your dick. Believe in what you believe in. And he gave me the weekend with Bobby Slayton. That's how I met Bobby Slayton in Houston, Texas, after I sent him. But this went on for 1.5 years where I wouldn't send the tape.
Really?
I fired a manager over it. You gotta send him a tape, Joe. It's professional. I ain't sending shit.
That's hysterical.
He knows I'm funny. What fucking send?
What fucking? I actually did that last week at work. I had this guy that I was working with. fucking, I'll tell him. 1 second.
Get together, cocksucker. Is the phone ringing?
No.
I'm supposed to have a guest today.
We will. It's only 6:40. Right. So quickly, I had some guy I was working with who just wasn't cutting it. Like you've done this a lot. You've changed managers and stuff. This guy I was working with at night who just wasn't doing his work at night. And after 4 weeks of working, it was getting worse. And I went into my boss on Thursday and I said, either it's his last night or it's my last night. And they finally fired the night guy. And like I was nervous about it. I was stressed about
it. His job here now?
Yeah.
They did fire him?
Yeah.
You're a fucking pimp, Lee.
I had to. I mean, he was fucking me up during the day. He's a nice guy, but you can't be nice and do a shitty job. Like I was actually thinking about that because you've changed agents and stuff and like I felt bad like I felt bad because I mean he's not working right now or maybe he found another gig, but it's kind of a weird thing to do that to somebody.
Listen, man, business is business.
Yeah,
you know? Business is fucking business. Maybe you made his wake-up call indirect.
Yeah.
Maybe that guy was going through something that you made his business call indirect. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was slipping. He needed to get fired. Sometimes you got to make a move. And I hate it, too. I fucking hate it, too. I hate working with people and finding out they're duds. Nothing worse than that. Nothing worse than people. Listen, there's certain people who can work together, and there's they can be opposites, like a relationship. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe you're the hustler and you cover something, but there's some people that just don't want to do dick.
Yeah.
They don't want to do dick, and then they want to argue with you. And that's one thing I will not fucking tolerate. I'm not going to argue with nobody. I didn't argue with my fucking wife. This is the way you do it. You know, one of the biggest lessons I got, I worked with these Jewish people, and I was a telemarketer for them. And they really fucking set me straight. I remember him going, oh yeah, by the way, we're working Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Jesus was a fucking Jew. That was how he told you. You were working Christmas Day. Jesus is a fucking Jew. But he used to say, this is how it needs to be done. If you can't do it that way, we'll shake hands and we'll part friends and I'll buy you a drink next time I see you and I will not hold it against you. But this is how this things need to be done. There's people that want to come on. Well, you know, my social media guy. Listen, your social media guy gets paid by the fucking hour. I'm telling you, I know this shit. And it, whether it's social media, I'm just saying social media. I'm sorry. But it's different people and at every type of level. You people have them in your day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You people have people in your people listen to this podcast. You know who I'm talking about. You got the guy across from you in a fucking cubicle that can't work the fucking printer. Well, there's always something. That, and you got to carry the fucking slack.
Yeah.
And you know what? You do it because maybe they're going through something. Maybe they're going through a divorce. They lost a wife. Who knows? But one day you get fed up because you're a fucking American. You got to work. You get up at 8 to 5, you got to work.
Yeah.
One thing I always had was fucking work ethic. As a little guy, I had it. And because my mom owned a bar, but she would still make me go up there, dog. When I was 5, I was cleaning out the period box in the woman's bathroom with no gloves on. Okay, there wasn't like gloves then that you put little gloves on and you clean the toilet. There were the fucking dish gloves to do dishes that smelt like your mother's asshole. You ever smell the inside of a fucking dish glove?
Oh, they're awful.
They're fucking awful. So, or you could put your hand in the water and scrub that fucking toilet and the urinal. I had to put ice. Dog, I did all that shit. And at 5, my mother broke me. They broke my fucking spirit. The first time she goes, go in that little box next to the woman's toilet. There's money in there. I stuck my hand there and ripped out a cotton ball filled with blood. I nearly fucking died, dog. You understand me? You fucking understand. And then she used to make me mop. She used to make me vacuum. She used to make me do windows. I remember vacuuming. She used to call me slave in Spanish. Esclavo. You know what that's fucking like?
Really?
Yeah, man. You gotta work. You gotta get it because if not, nobody's gonna do it for you.
Yeah.
There just comes a point one day where you wake up and you go, I'm gonna do this right. I've been fucking around for so fucking long. You know, nothing bothers me more when somebody sweeps and they don't sweep the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't move a box. Or they don't pick up the printer when you're dusting. Pick up the fucking printer and dust underneath, you fuck. You know, my shit's immaculate. I like that. But that's me. I know how to clean. I know how to get under things. There's people who fucking live around the mess.
Yeah. I've had a DVD box out just because it's a DVD box. And every time it comes in, it pisses you off.
Which one?
The DVD box.
Oh, yeah. It's just laying there. Pick the fucking thing up. 3 months it's there. What do? You show it to people, you whack off on it, pick the fucking thing up.
This is a DVD box. Oh, that kills me. Every time he comes in, he looks at it, he shakes his head.
He's you know, last motherfucker. Last night I was watching something that was very interesting. I did the emails and I wrote a little bit and I wanted to put ice on my fucking toe. You know, it doesn't hurt as much anymore, as much as it was hurting. I mean, it's still a nagging fucking pain.
Yeah.
So I put my foot up and I put ice on it and I was watching TV and I was about to watch Dexter. I had it taped and it was inside the American Mafia on John Gotti.
Oh, cool.
And it was just the ins and outs of John Gotti. And, you know, for people not in that world, and then I didn't know John, I didn't know of him, you know, I just read about him and heard the stories. Once I got to Colorado, I know he shot Paul Castellano. Then when I went back to New York in 93, I knew people who he knew, whatever, or
yeah.
He bragged. I didn't know the fucking guy. I didn't know nothing about him. So I'm watching this lesson. I'm just killing time. You know when you're stoned and you're just going through the channels? I didn't feel like getting into a movie. I taped Sons of Anarchy last Wednesday. I didn't feel like getting into that. I taped The Honeymooners at 1:30 every night, and they're a half hour. But I didn't think I had a half hour. So I just said, let me just watch what they're pushing, you know? And I'm looking at this Gotti guy, and I got to tell you something. I don't like what he did. I don't like what he did. You know, on the other side of it, he was too flashy. I don't believe in all that flash and show. I understand that world because my stepdad lived in that world. But one thing Gotti had that I really admired was heart. And when he did something, he did it all the way. That Paul Castellano hit was something of fun. If you ever go to New York, take a cab to Sparks Steakhouse. Just take a cab and go in front of Sparks Steakhouse, or turn around and look at the street. Look at the floor, look at the street, how big it is. This guy killed two people in broad daylight at 5:30 at night, 6 o'clock at night, and made a statement. He was 45 years old when he did it.
Mm-hmm.
He made a statement. Usually after when you do something, and we have to argue about it. He made such a statement that he walked into your house and said, "Hey, I'm the new boss. We got a problem." And you sit there and said, "What? No, what is the fucking problem? What could possibly be the fucking problem?" And he just did that. He took over a $12 million a year enterprise. Cash.
Just by killing those two people?
Just by killing those two people. Just took over. He went, he got like three guys, and he said, "This is what we're doing. We're going to shoot this motherfucker a week before Christmas. And then we're taking over this motherfucker. And we're going to sell more heroin that's ever been done." What happened was the bosses were selling heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want anybody selling heroin because that's their trade. The profit on heroin is huge. You could buy a kilo and 10 times that. So let's say you buy a kilo for 50 fucking grand. Mm-hmm. You could walk out of it with $400,000 by cutting it 18 times and selling it to Spanish people and black people and all those markets in Harlem and having it. Even if you make the guy a partner and give him $100,000, you still walk out of it with $300,000 and you don't do shit. And you're walking around going, "This is part of Gambino money. So you fuck with me, you're going to get a bunch of Italians coming at you." So it's like stealing with no fucking, you know, it's like stealing, you know?
That's crazy.
So he was selling heroin to keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, you loan shark and you fucking take numbers. That's what you let people think. But your main business is H.
I didn't know that the mob's main business. You never really think about it. Like, you see them, like, all the movies, but so the main thing they did was sell drugs?
H, heroin. The Bananos were all about heroin. They got it from Montreal, and then everybody else jumped in on it. But everybody else wasn't supposed to be a heroin salesman. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? So I'm not supposed to be a heroin salesman. I'm supposed to be a bookie. But deep down inside, I'm lending out money at points to heroin dealers. So I'll give them $50,000, they give me back $60,000 in 2 days. I'm still. You can follow me, there's different ways to do things.
Yeah.
I could be a drug dealer and just invest in three Puerto Ricans. Just say, "Come here, I got the guy for you. This is what you're going to get, this is what I'm going to get. But we're going to sell in volume. And I'm going to be at home picking up envelopes." So when they found out Gotti was selling heroin, they're like, "This motherfucker is jumping up on our trade." You know, they wanted to make money, but they didn't want anybody else to make money.
Yeah.
Jeez. They started talking about it, you know, because everybody knows that the captains bring the envelopes to you. Okay. You don't know what those envelopes are about. I could just tell you, "Nah, I did a real estate deal. I just sold 10 pounds of heroin." You don't know that. By you accepting that money, you become part of a RICO. So it makes you a drug dealer. That's what the RICO thing is about, to charge the street soldier all the way up to the highest guy in the enterprise. That's what the RICO act is about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. They went after John Gotti. They were going to kill John Gotti. Before John Gotti got killed, he put together three guys. He put together another four or five shooters, dressed them up like Russians.
Okay.
Put them outside of Sparks. And when Castellano pulled up with his bodyguard, when he got out of the car, they just started fucking blasting and then walked away into the Christmas shuffle. It was dark, 5:36, you know, thousands of people on the Lower East Side. And they just walked away into the night. It was one of the most perfect hits of all time.
Wow.
When you're going to do something, do it in front of their fucking face. Don't creep around and do it. They're going to do it in the house and sneak into the house. Fuck that. They just shot this motherfucker. They just said, "Fuck it. We'll just shoot this guy in the middle of the street and then we'll take over the organization." Then he fucked it up. Then he started talking shit and he went on tape and he ruined it himself. And Sammy the Bull, they blamed it on him, but it was Gotti at the end of the row.
That's great. Were they talking about Whitey Bulger in Boston when you were there at all? Because I haven't been back, so I don't know what's going on.
That is
there.
The biggest waste of time ever in my life that I've heard. The guy's 83 years old.
Yeah. So what do you think they should do?
You know what that trial is costing?
Millions.
Millions. For what? For what? This was the worst fucking things of all time. He was shooting people, but he was a fucking informant for the FBI. The FBI could say all in all that we don't know what his activities were. We don't know what they were doing. They know what he was fucking doing.
Yeah.
He was working for the FBI. He was doubling up. It happens. It happens all the fucking time. You know? It happens all the fucking time. I seen it at the lowest levels. You know? Cops would come over and talk to me. You always have to have a cop as a friend. They give you shit. You give them shit. You're not really a rat, but you're talking about who's moving against you. If I go to a club one night and Lisa Ack comes up to me with three of his fucking Puerto Rican friends and he muscles up on me, I got two options. I could fight this dude, or next time I see my cousin who's a cop, I'm going to let him know to shake these motherfuckers. Just pull them over one night and take that coke, smack them around a little bit.
Yeah.
And they all make money. Shake them down.
Was that a big thing for you, being a rat? Because, like, I watched a bunch of interviews with people on the street in Boston, and a bunch of the Celtic people were like, he got what he deserved. He was a rat.
Who?
Bulger.
They knew it while he was doing it.
No, I understand. I'm saying the people in Boston didn't like it. Like, when was that a big thing for you, like, not ratting?
Listen, I'm not into all that mafia movies and stuff like that, because sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But I'm not in the business of it. I'm not in the fucking business of it, and I never planned on being it. That's just me. That's how I was raised.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't understand that. You know, Cat Williams makes a point that when you grow up, your mama tells you, don't tattle. That's it. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's been situations at the Comedy Store where something happened and the cops called me later on. I didn't tattle. I don't know nothing. Till this day, I don't know fucking nothing. You know, all those years when I got arrested, I didn't say nothing. And I remember in Boulder, they tried to fucking fuck with me. Two people tried to fuck me. The local police. I forget what the guy's name was. The guy that arrested me was Seeper, but his partner, the brunette guy, was trying to fuck with me.
And what do you mean, fuck with you?
You know, talk to me. Let me know if you could help us. We could talk to the judge, blah, 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 blah.
And that's what the guy who got arrested with you did, right?
The guy that got arrested with me, not Vella, Tidwell.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Tidwell became a rat, and he still got 10 years.
Really?
He got 10 years. Well, wow. He ratted against me. He turned evidence against me. They wanted two against one.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. He just ratted on me, that it was my idea, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, I played it from the other angle. You know, what a lot of people don't know is that morning, before I did the kidnapping I did at 11 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
But that morning at 9, I got these teeth filled. I got a bunch of teeth filled, and the doctor gave me medication, and he put me under that gas. And the fucking attorneys wanted to argue that it was why I kidnapped the guy. I didn't kidnap. I could have taken that defense. You know, I'm not the type of guy, I can't lie like that. It wasn't in me to lie like that. Even if they came back to me the first time with 9 fucking years. I thought about what I had done and what I had said that day. And I knew that what they made it to be and what I did was two different fucking things. And in my mind, the guy was a fucking drug dealer. That's why I fucking took him and kidnapped him. But it's not what it was. He was a human being. And that's where I fucked up. And he has rules and I had rules.
Oh, I'm going to call command.
Oh, shit.
Yo.
It's my little brother, Sal Lubatz. What's happening, brother?
Nothing, man. I almost forgot you.
Long time, Sal Lubatz. You know, this Inside the American Mob came on a couple of weeks ago. Oh. I lost him.
Hello. Let's see if he calls back. So, yeah. So, while we're waiting, you were saying...
You know, and that's why I fucked up. Like, I let the cocaine addiction talk me into robbing this guy. Like, somewhere in my mind, I was that warped. But during the kidnapping, I saw the realism of the situation.
Yeah.
I saw how real it was. I saw that there was going to be guns involved. And I'll never forget that I had a gun in the trunk. I had this old gun in the trunk that I had from Colorado that I had brought down with me that I really wasn't taking care of anymore. I wasn't oiling it or greasing it like you're supposed to take the bullets out, and I just had it. And I didn't know if it was even going to work or whatever, and I took it with me. I always had it in the trunk of a car, because in those days I sold cars, so the cars weren't mine. So I put the gun in there, and if I got pulled over, I don't know whose fucking gun it is. Why are you blaming me? I'm just driving the fucking car. You understand me? That's how crazy I was at the time, and I had this gun. And that day when I went to kidnap Vella, I had that gun. And I never forget that. When I found out that Tidwell had double-crossed me, like tried to rob me, tell me that that's not what was at the house, I left there and I was hurt. Like this, like I had never encountered this. Like that was the first time at the age of 25 that somebody that I was a partner with and I was robbing with was double-crossing me. And really? This is what I get for robbing with somebody out of my neighborhood. This is what I get. Hey, brother, what's happening? Yeah, yeah, try me on the other line. Try me on the 818. So do you understand me? I mean, this is, I had never been through that before.
Yeah.
And I had a good friend, Darren Rago, God bless his soul, and Joey Filato, and Darren knew a bunch of people, but I didn't have the money to fly him out.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were like, dog, if we could do it, we'll do it in a week. I'm doing something else. So I didn't have time.
Yeah.
You know what my big mistake was, Lee, between me and you being a pussy and not taking this guy down myself? See, that was my biggest mistake. I had done that before. I know how to double cross people, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. This is amazing. We're getting on this conversation. About two months.
Finish it in a second.
I got to finish the story.
Yo.
Sal, what's happening, brother?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. I know that you got bad reception and everything. I just wanted to say that ever since the show Inside the American Mob came on, people have been hitting me up. I mean, people really liked when you came on the podcast the two times for me. And they wanted me to get you back on and talk, ask you questions and shit like that. How you been beside that, brother?
Good, good. I'm going tomorrow to New York. I'm going to do the Charlie Rose morning show.
Okay. And you still, how's the book going?
Yeah, the book's selling well. We're going to have a paperback January, so we're busy.
You looked beautiful last night on television, by the way.
Oh, you saw it last night?
Yeah, yeah, for the first time. Sal, I tape them. I fly back on Saturday, on Sundays. So Sunday nights, I'm answering emails, I'm doing this, but last night I caught the 10 o'clock one, the Inside John Gotti, and I was telling the people at home about John Gotti and what I liked and didn't like. What'd you think of that last night?
I didn't see it. I never look at the damn thing.
Well, you and the one guy are very interesting on the show, I gotta be honest with you.
It was, I went back there in January and did 2 days of interviews. They took me to a Brooklyn Navy Yard, and they just sat me in front of a camera for 2 days, and we interviewed for hours and hours and hours. And then when they do the show, you never know what the hell they're going to use, but they use 20 seconds here, 20 seconds there. What was interesting, I had met Michael Franzese in 1975. We didn't see each other since 1975, and then we hooked up a couple of weeks ago. We did all the promotions and we laughed about all kinds of stuff, because his father and my uncle went to jail together.
Now, his father was Sonny, correct?
Yeah.
Like the
yeah,
music. Big time. Now, isn't there a story that he told fucking, what's the music mogul? What's the big black music mogul today that everybody's scared of from Death Row Records?
Oh, yeah. I don't know the whole...
Yeah, yeah. That he told him to shut the fuck up one day or something. Because Sonny was in part of the music thing. But anyway, it was interesting last night because they just went through the career of Gotti and all the cases. And they had Cutler talking about you and you talking about Cutler and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's Sal, every morning when you get up, do you kiss the fucking floor, Sal?
Oh, I feel like I'm lucky to even be here.
Oh, my God, Sal. It's amazing. I'm thinking about that as I'm going to bed last night, that all those people are gone, and they all died in fucking horrible ways. Their lives all ended in terrible fucking ways, and that's you crazy. Got out, had a family, had two beautiful boys, and are successful now, yeah. And just everything happens for a reason, Sal. And I'm not mad at you, what the fuck?
It's like what you sow is what you reap. I mean, that's just the way life is.
What's next, brother? We writing any scripts? What's the story? Tell me something good.
I'm just chilling out. I might do the show. I've been watching some stuff, and somebody wants me to do a comedy stand-up about the old life. So I don't know. I might write something like that. I don't know. Maybe we get a chance. We should do you and I should do a stand-up together talking about the old life, what it was like.
I tell you, Sal, I would love to fucking sit with you and help you write. I would love it. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't do what you do. I wasn't in that deep or nothing. I was a stupid drug guy, but I would love to help you, Sal. I think you're a funny guy off the fucking cuff, to be honest. You got the face. You're beautiful.
We probably do a comedic take on drugs because, the drug policy sucks. Legitimately, it's a terrible situation. Finally, Obama and Holder released information last week. They're going to start cutting the sentences. But we have so many stories, your stories, my stories, about drugs and how funny it is and why the government wants to put their nose in people's personal business. You want to do a drug, it should be your business, So we probably should sit down. We could probably write a little monologue, and it would be fun.
You still hanging out with the lady helping you at the one-man show and stuff? You still trying to put that together?
No, I just moved away from that. I left it alone, you know. I might do that again. I got a new manager, so he's getting me out doing speaking engagements.
Okay, that always works, Al. There's a living. Michael Franchese has been doing it for fucking years.
Yeah.
Right? He goes to colleges and talks about that. He became a born-again, though, correct?
Yeah, he's a born-again guy. Yeah, that's cool. He's a nice guy. He's got a son that's a baseball player, nice family. You know, he's a good guy.
You know, man, Sal, it's really weird that you're older than I am and I'm 50, and it's weird how people make mistakes when they're young.
Oh, shit, man. I wish I could tell every 50-year-old, you should be starting your life over today. If you hit 50, start over today. Reinvent yourself, man.
It's amazing that people are reinventing themselves at 50. Look at me. I'm walking around with a 7-month-old girl. 7 months, Sal. This is new life in my house. I didn't even know I had sperm left. You know, and all of a sudden she's beautiful. My wife is happy. I've never made anybody happy in my life like this. So it happened at 50.
You got a little baby.
Yeah, a little baby girl, Sal.
See, that's what I did. I was 49. I had a little girl. My daughter just turned 20 the other day.
Jesus Christ. God bless you, Sal. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, she was in that movie with us. But you know what? Here you are with a little girl. You have a completely different view on life, Joey.
Yes, I do. It doesn't matter anymore. She's all that matters. Yeah. I'm getting a second chance, Sal.
Maybe we should do that. We should talk about hitting 50 and having a second chance. I bet you people would love it.
You know, Sal, the biggest problem in this country right now is people can't believe that Doug Dynasty broke every fucking record in the book last week. Did you see it? Do you know what's going on with these fucking mooks? Do you ever watch the show? Sal, the show is great. The show is, it's creepy and great, and it's got so many aspects of it. But it even broke the Sopranos cable record. Like, it fucked everybody up. But you know why, Sal? Do you know why? Because at the end, Sal, they say a prayer together. They all eat, and as they're passing the mashed potatoes, they say a prayer. They're a family. 30 years ago, what was the hot show? The fucking Waltons. Why was the Waltons hot? Because old man Walton got water? No, because at the end of the show, it was a family. They reminded America about being a family. Good night, Billie Jean. Good night, cocksucker. Good night, Papa Joe. You know, when I never had a family, Sal. Why did...
Yeah, let's do something on family, you and I. We can do a comedic take, but it would be more than comedy. It would be reality.
It's reality. Look at the family that was given to me after my mother died. I was mixed with Italians and Irish, who in reality say the word spick more than anybody. They love me, Sal. I made Guineas and Irish love me, Sal, for being me. When was the last time an Italian brought a Cuban home and said he's staying with us? That's your bedroom. That's your fucking bedroom. That was the Italians in 1970. As much shit as they talked, they brought me into their homes and they gave me brajol and they fucking fed me and, you know.
Wow.
So let's write something on family, brother.
That's an amazing story. You ever write a script about that?
I'm trying. I'm in the process. But, you know, it's too much like Bronx Tale. It's too much like that. It would sound like that, but it's the truth. You know, what really happened, Sal, was they had four boys. And the one boy died. And I looked like him. And I was always with him. So I filled in. And then my mother died. So now they filled in for me. It was a beautiful fucking thing. Until this day, I still talk to Carmine every week. I call him every week. He's 70-something years old.
But that's not like Bronx Tale. Your story is a drama. You know, a real story with real names. Bronx Tale was fictionalized by Palmateer. You know, your story, you lost...
Oh, he's gone.
I lost the call. No, I lost that.
Do you want me to wait for him to call back?
Whatever. What do you want to do here? Let me give some shout-outs real quick to some beautiful fucking people.
Yeah.
Daniel Toon. Steve, happy birthday, Cecilia. Wants to lick your nuts. Salamander.
Yeah. So, what? You know, you have a unique story. You should write the script, Joey.
Okay. I'm thinking about it. I've been thinking about it for a long time. I still talk to him. I still talk to two of the four boys.
Yeah. It's not difficult to do. I've been doing it 20 years. You sit down and you write your outline. You could almost verbally, you know, dictate the outline. In one or 2 hours, you have an outline, just broad strokes. And you go back and you start writing the script. It's a good story, man.
You want to get together next week and talk about it?
Yeah, call me next week. I'll be back Friday, so call me the end of the week, and we'll talk. Maybe we can meet, and you could do a little outline. I'll help you do the outline. It's easy. My friend Mardik, you know, the guy who wrote Raging Bull, that's how I learned how to do it with him, you know?
I'd appreciate it, Sal. I'll give you a call next Sunday for sure. Sal, I want to congratulate you. You're a fucking the last of the real survivors. You're always eking out a living. I love you, dog. You're the last, and you got a great story, and I hope people buy your book. What's the name of the book?
Sinatra Club.
Oh, so it's the movie. Okay, all right. No, and I was in the movie, so people still hit me up twice a week. Hey, we saw you in the Sinatra Club.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing for you, Sal. I was watching you last night. I'm seeing all those guys who at the time thought they had the life. Look at half of them are getting dead. Sal Ruggiero, Eddie Leno. You know, what a horrible way to live your fucking life, man.
Like a shooting star, man, you know?
Have a great day. Thank you for calling, being a part of the church of what's happening now. You know I love you, Sal.
All right, talk soon.
Thanks for the help. What do you think about that, Cuxon?
I love it.
All right, let me give some... Cecilia, it was Steve's birthday, so Cecilia called me, said give him a fucking shout-out. Gregory Hart, Mitch Berger, Luna Valenti, I love you, cocksucker. Darif and Michael Rosario and shit. And don't forget, as usual, let me tell you something, cocksuckers. You don't want me to tell you? I broke my all-time epileptical record this week.
Oh, shit.
53 minutes.
Really?
I took three of those fucking shroom techs. I couldn't stop my legs. But the thing about shroom tech is, it don't kick in when you're starting some. It kicks in as you're doing it. Like, you feel all of a sudden, like, you just feel the wind go, and all of a sudden, you're like, God damn, I'm ready to run a hill. Listen, go to Onnit. Press in fucking church. Get 15% off. I'll tell you what the combination is I've been doing. I took the strong bone, mm-hmm. and I used it as a spilt, as a, what is that, a slit for my toe. I tie a string around it.
Okay.
I've been taking the strong bones. You know, I talk to Aubrey, and I go, I've been taking the fucking strong bones, Ari. And I tell you what, my toe does feel a little better. It's going to take 6 to 8 weeks, but I'm trying to give it all the help I can. Look at it. Look, a strong bone came in for me. So
good.
It's helping me. I don't have that much pain. Go to Onnit. They got a great combination. Get the protein powder, the strong bone. Get that fucking shroom tech. If you need endurance, I'm telling you, I'm a fat fuck. Thank God my man in jiu-jitsu class told me about it. I popped them, and now I can't get fucking gut. Anything I do, I go for a walk, I pop 3 shroom techs. Get those fucking mushroom popping those red blood cells. Are you kidding me or what?
Yeah, someone I work with takes the new mood. He said that helps him sleep a lot.
I'm telling you, and those fucking things, I'm almost out of the 15-day packages, and I can feel the difference. I didn't take it this morning because I didn't even have a protein shake this morning. I just had 2 bananas. 2 motherfucking bananas, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, shit. And you were telling me today that Dollar Shave Club came, and quickly there are so many things that irritate both of us. Fucking people who aren't real, lines at the airport, whatever irritates you. There's so many things that irritate you in the world. Why would you let razors add to it? What we're saying is stop milking your razor blade. With name brand razors, you're used to paying outrageous prices and exhausting those razors until they start looking like a rusty soda can. Let it go. It's time to move on. Dollar Shave Club delivers amazing quality blades to your door for just a few bucks a month. Never think about it again. They send a pack every month for just a few bucks. You can change your blades every week. Trust me, your face will love you for it. Joey uses it, and you should too. Join Dollar Shave Club. Shave time, shave money. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/church. That's dollarshaveclub.com/church.
Let me break it down for you, all right? Let me cut the shit for you, because money talks and bullshit fucking walks, okay? Let's say you buy the 8-pack of razor. It's like $9.99 or something like that, right? Let's pretend. Just a generic. You buy like the cheap pack of razor. Let me tell you what you get from Dollar Shave Club. You don't get this fucking joint. Let me tell you what you get from Dollar Shave Club. You get this fucking razor, okay? And it's not a... That's the real fucking thing. You can hit your girlfriend. You can fucking blast her in the fucking head with this. You get 4 Gorilla double blades. Look at this shit. With the lubricant and the aloe to smoothen out your fucking thing. You get these one wipe fucking towelettes. You can wipe your ass, your face, your nose. Yeah, you got Coke rocks in your nose. And you get the shave butter. You know what you get that for? $9 fucking dollars. $9 a month. You think about it. Not that you don't have to go to CVS. You don't have to do none of that shit. $9 a month. Now, for $6 a month, you get 1 razor a week and the fucking cut. You still get this. I'm not fucking with you. This thing is fucking solid. This ain't no hollow fucking thing that you can put a joint. Look, this is the real fucking deal. I ain't messing with you people. $6 a month. You know what that comes out to? $72 fucking dollars a year. $72 a fucking year, and it comes to your door. You don't have to leave the house. Don't fuck around. Go to Dollar Shave Club right now. Put in, what do you put in the
church?
Box? Church, in the box. Why fuck around? $6 a month, and then they got the $1 a fucking month package, which you get like two razors, and you get this, you don't get the towelettes, you don't get nothing. You want to walk around with a dirty ass? For $9, you get the whole thing a month. $9 fucking dollars. So you know what that comes out to? That's 90 to 18. That's 108 for the fucking year. It comes right to your fucking door. And listen, I'm not saying you should do this today. Let's say you don't have the 108 a year. Get the $6 package. Fuck it. Do what I do. Rub soap on your face with like a toothbrush and shit. Get in there in the shower, because that's where you shave, in the shower. Like, not like a Puerto Rican out cold while you're talking to your girlfriend. It's ripping your fucking face apart. You get in the shower, turn it on hot, let your pores open up. You get this razor and these fucking blades, and I guarantee you'll be loving me. Even if you do the $6 package. Do the $6 package for starters. That's $72 fucking dollars a year. You're going to love me for it. That's all I got to tell these people. Number two, Hulu Plus. My wife's been fucking using it, and she started watching Breaking Bad, because we watched the pilot and whatever, so yeah. Now she's watching Breaking Bad on Hulu Plus. Again, I saw the lineup that she was showing me and what she watched. For $7.99 a month, guys? Are you fucking retarded? Why don't you go bang your fucking head off the door right now? $7.99 is what you fucking morons spend in parking, trying to be cool with your fucking buddies like an asshole. You think they give a fuck when you're 50 that you pay for parking? Fuck no. Get the $7.99. You get 2 weeks free. You go to HuluPlus.com. Press
Joey
in the fucking box. Boom! 2 weeks for free. I'm giving you two on the arm. When was the last time you went to something and go, you know what? I'm thinking of smoking your fucking reefer, but I don't have no money. Give me 2 weeks for free. Huh? Anybody do that? That's what you do when you run with me. I'm giving you 2 weeks for free so you see what HuluPlus.com is about. And after that, it's $7.99. And that's what your girlfriend's ass just sound like when you smack that dirty butt. You... cock suck, I'll smack that fucking dirty ass. HuluPlus.com, Dollar Shave Club, press Joey on it. Press whatever the fuck you want to press. That's what I'm
church.
Talking about. Church. What's up, dog? It's Monday morning. If you ain't fired up, turn the channel. Go watch Good Morning America with four broads scratching their pussy. I don't give a fuck. This is Mad Flavors World. This is the church of what's happening now with Lee Syatt and Joey fucking Diaz blasting you off. I said today, you got two choices today. You can either suck a cock or get your sock cucked. Or get your cock sucked. Which one are you doing today, you bad motherfuckers?
You have a story to finish.
What story?
The story, you wrote it down. We were talking about the guy you robbed in Double Crossing.
Oh, I forgot I wrote zebra. I don't know. How high am I? I don't even know why I wrote zebra. What the fuck is wrong with you, Joe?
You wrote zebra down?
Yeah, I don't know why. Zebra.
Maybe people are hiding or something?
Too bad, bro. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it was Double Crossing, and you should have taken him down by yourself.
No, I should have taken him down by myself, but I was a pussy. I wasn't confident. I was on a coke. I was 25. Now, I had taken people down by myself before. I had jumped out of a bush before and taken people down with like a stick or something.
Yeah.
This guy would have had to take him down with a gun. I would have had to tie him up by myself. There was a lot more steps. I wasn't patient. I went and I recruited this fucking half a fucking idiot. And he caved on me. You know, he fucking caved on me. And he didn't testify on everybody else. He just sat across from me and testified. And then years later, he tried denying. I'm like, guy, you were a fucking trustee with a violent felony. You can't be a bold trustee if you have a violent felony. I wasn't no fucking trustee. He was a trustee. That means that you mop and they allow you out of the cell and you eat double the fucking food. So if you didn't fucking rat on me, how come you're a fucking trustee? I bumped into him years later. I didn't rat on you in the system. I didn't rat. Get the fuck out of my face. What am I going to do, smack him, whatever, so he can rat on me again? That's the dumbest fucking thing.
Yeah.
But about 2 months ago, I was watching something on Twitter.
Okay.
Joe Rogan had put, and I discussed this before, and I never told this story before, but I'm going to say it now just so you people know it. I had watched this video by Joe Rogan about a zebra getting attacked by alligators.
Okay.
And you could hear the zebra cry for his life. And I turned the fucking thing off, and I was 2 minutes from calling Joe and going, don't put a video like that ever on again. Because it's not good to hear somebody beg for their fucking life.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not good to people beg for their fucking life. And I don't care if I get arrested for this 20 years later. I'm still not going to tell you the names. Well, I was about 15. And that's why when I read the Samuel Bugavano book, I enjoyed the book so much because I understood where he was coming from. He was the type of guy, Samuel Bugavano, that would hang out with Lee for 10 years. Eat with Lee. Eat with you, Lee. Have you over my baptism. Have you over my house. And one day over a money agreement, he would call you up And go, Lee, come on, let's go smoke pot. And you're like, I don't want to. I can't. And he'd talk you into getting in the car, and next thing you know, he'd shoot you. Or he'd get you shot. He knew how to do that. That was his gift.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you knew, even if somebody called you and said, dog, the mafia is looking to shoot you. He was that strong. He'd come over and go, Lee, come on, I got you. And right outside, they'd fucking hook you up. Well, guess who else had that gift? Me. I had that gift, and I knew I had it, and I didn't like it. I could double-cross anybody. I've done them. I've told people that for $1,000 they're going to join the mafia and not giving them the money back. I've gone up to people. There was a guy who gave me $3,000 one time for weed, and I strung him out for like a year. But if you're that stupid, you deserve to get robbed by me at that time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I could double-cross you with the best of people. When I was a kid, I had a friend. He wasn't a best friend. He was just a friend. I knew him. And he was kind of a fucking knucklehead, you know. Did I know him well? Did I eat lunch at his house and shit? No. I just knew him.
He was an acquaintance.
I was an acquaintance. And he talked shit about some girl one day. He talked a lot of shit about some girl that he shouldn't have. He sucked the tip, but he told everybody he fucked or whatever. I was in the eighth grade, you know, but I was a year older because I had gotten left back, and I knew this cop, you know. I knew this cop, and we had talked, we had like, conversations a few times, nothing, right? I was 14, you know, I wasn't doing nothing at the time. I was playing basketball. He just liked the way I played basketball, and we had become friends. And one day, he came to my house in his work car, you know, not in a police car, like in a regular, but he wasn't a cop in North Bergen. He was a cop in a different jurisdiction. He came to my house and he called around and he wanted to know where I lived. I knew him from a different place in my life. And he came to me and like a man, he knocked on my door. My mom goes, there's a man outside that wants to talk to you. And I went outside. My mom goes, who's that? And I go, he's a basketball coach. You know, and if I say from where, people are going to figure it out. And he told me, he came to me like a man. He goes, this guy talks shit about my sister. And I can't just go there and grab him in the street. I need somebody to shake him out of the house.
Okay.
You know, and this, and I'm like, you know, are you fucking serious? And he's like, I'll help you. If you ever get into a jam, I'll help you, which he did years later. He goes, I'll help you, and I'll give you a couple of dollars, but nobody could talk about my sister that way. And I didn't have a sister. I had a sister in Cuba. So I put myself in that spot. And one day, I go, you got it. I called him up, and he came and picked me up in this weird fucking car, and they drove me up to wherever, and I called for the kid, and it was about basketball or something like that, and I got him out of the house, and they pulled the kid in the corner, and they fucking smacked the shit out of him, and they put a gun to his fucking head, and that kid shit and pissed himself, you know, and I remember him crying, begging for his fucking life, and I felt really bad about it, and I swore I would never do that, something like that again, that I let somebody get their own thing. I heard that kid fucking screeching for his fucking life.
Were they going to kill him?
Well, they were going to kill him. They were going to do something to him. They were going to shoot him in the leg. They were going to do something to him. They smacked him around. They broke his fucking nose. They busted his fucking mouth. You know, he deserved it, you know. Did I feel bad about it? Ah! But those are the things that scared me about my own life, that I could do something like that. I could talk somebody into fucking doing it. I could talk anybody into taking a ride and shooting them. Easy. That's the easiest gift I got. That's the gift of gab, you know. But I knew I had it, and I didn't like it, so I never really... I'm not a double-crosser because of that. I'd rather look you in the eye and tell you what I'm thinking than fuck with you. That's how my mother raised me. But yeah. I knew that I had that option. I knew I always had that option. Do you know what I'm saying? And after that, I always felt bad. I remained friends with the cop. The kid never liked me, but he never said nothing to nobody because those cops knew they were going to fucking shoot him in the fucking head if he ever did speak.
Yeah, I was going to say, because in today's world... Like, if I ever came home with, like, a broken nose like that, my mom would, like, she would have had, like, the DA there, the FBI.
Oh, they broke his fucking nose. So, like, busted his mouth.
So, like, how could you not, like it's just a different
time? In those
time,
days, like, you could say anything. In those days, what? If they weren't there, they're not there. Your parents aren't there.
Okay.
You know, you could say anything. I fell down. Trust me, you're holding an ice pack to your head and they're stitching you up. You can't say who hit you. Not in those days. In those days, you can't say. You had two options at the hospital. You didn't say who hit you and you moved on with your life, or you didn't say who hit you to calm those people down, and within 2 or 3 years, you blasted them. I had a friend, Randy Mergel, who's dead. Randy Mergel was one of the most dangerous people I ever met in my life. He was from North Bergen, New Jersey. He lived behind Lincoln School across from a jacket factory or something. And at the age of 18, he robbed that jacket thing for like $25,000, $30,000, and he went into business. I took a lot of half grams on the arm from Randy Mergel when I was young. I took a lot of half. He used to hide them in the freezer up in the top floor. I would go to his house, open the freezer, and take two of them and go play. Randy was a dear friend of mine. I love Randy. He dated Joanne, and he hung out with another friend of mine, D'Agostino, from fucking down in Florida, the D'Agostinos. And Randy was a tough motherfucker. He never played football. He played like peewee football and freshman football, but then he became a drug dealer. He didn't want to play sophomore and junior year. And his senior year, they asked him to play. And he started, like, just after not playing football for 2 years, because the blast, he was crazy, he was athletic, he would hit you hard, and he was just crazy. Randy Mergel was just fucking crazy. One night, they told me that Randy Mergel's in the fucking hospital. That he got jumped by three Puerto Ricans at a carnival. I've told this story before on the podcast.
I remember this story.
And they took him home, he was in the hospital, I went to his house, he was stitched up, his fucking eyes were poked. Oh my God, it was fucking horrible. And he kept, Randy, who did this? Three fucking spics from Hudson County Park. They had a red shirt on. And I mean, this guy kept telling them, three spics from Hudson County Park. And about a year later, some other one of our friends comes up, busted up. Somebody busted him the fuck up. He wasn't a dear friend of mine. He was like some dirty fucking dude from up in Cliffside, one of those towns that hung in North Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard he was busted up, and years later I saw Randy. I go, Randy, what happened to our boy? He goes, that guy wasn't my boy. He goes, let me tell you a story. A couple nights we went out, and one night we got all fucked up, and he wanted blow, and he gave me like a Quaalude to make me black out. He threw the beating on me. So instead of me saying it was him and having you guys beat him up, I waited 2 or 3 years, and I got him one night with a fucking bat. That's genius.
Jesus.
That's genius right there. So that's the fucking story right there you guys get today. What do you think of that one, Lee?
That's crazy.
This is a Monday morning, bro. We don't fuck around on Mondays. I got to get these motherfuckers fired up. Let me tell you something. When Lee came in, and I don't really mean to end the podcast like this, but you know what? Just like John Gotti, you have to make a choice in your life, and you have to commit to it. When you came in here tonight, and you know what? Fuck it. No, fuck it. I opened my mouth. When you came in here tonight, you said that you had gone to the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
And talent coordinator came up to you, that fucking moron, whatever his name is. What's his name?
Tommy.
You know, I was there with Corey Cuomo. I was there when Duncan was the talent coordinator. I was there with Kelly, but I was also there with Scott Day, who was probably the best talent coordinator. That's who made me. That's who helped, who talked Mitzi into doing that. One of the worst talent coordinators that Comedy Store had was by the name of Tommy. And to this day, I don't step foot in the Comedy Store for various reasons. Well, he don't like me. He told people I wasn't funny, so I didn't really fuck with him no more. But number two, I'd started at the store, and I told the story before. I saw what Mitzi was about. And I saw Paulie Shore and that idiot that moved to Hawaii, tortured Joe Rogan one night. If I was Joe, I would have choked them both. But Joe's a great fucking guy, and he's got more control than I am. The thing that pissed me off the most about the store was Tommy and a comedian named John Caparulo. And I don't give a fuck, okay? Let me tell you how much of a pussy this kid is. He used to date this Shayma Tash, and I canceled. I was supposed to do a club in Alaska, and I got a movie. And I sent Shayma Tash, and some guy fucked Shayma Tash so good up there that she put the guy's name on her pussy. That's a true story.
What?
When she came back, you know that John Caparulo came after me and told me it was my fault that she went up there and sucked the guy's dick? I knew John Caparulo when he was an open mic guy. He was a great kid. And once he started getting funny, he thought he was fucking cool. And he stepped up to me one night with Tommy, telling me that when Joe Rogan came back from the Mensa Comedy Tour, the one he did with Charlie Murphy, and that he wasn't allowed to do 40 minutes no more. And I said, don't tell me, tell fucking Joe, you know. But that whole Joe Carlos Mencia fight, that was all started by Caparulo and Tommy. Till this day, I can't stand Caparulo. And I'm the type of guy that when I can't stand you, that's a bad situation when I can't stand you. Because he's the type of guy, I might make him suck my dick one day. Just out of principle, I might see him, smack him, and make him suck my dick. Say things to him to convince him to suck my dick. Even though I'm not a fag, what are you going to do? I'll only be a fag 15 years. I made a man suck my dick because that's not what men do. But in my world, I want to humiliate that dumb motherfucker so much because he's a sack of shit pussy. And I don't give a fuck who tells him or who. I'll smack you the fuck too. I don't give a fuck if Chelsea Handler comes and gets me, whatever. But it's so weird. You know, people come up to me now, oh, John Caparulo, I can't stand that motherfucker. And I was his friend. I used to talk to him all the time. I was always great to him. But here's a guy that didn't get money and got cocky. He got three things of funny, and all of a sudden he was bad to the bone. He don't understand that the school we're from, we'll fucking mangle you. You know what I'm saying? Like, we'll fucking mangle you. So for you people who think he's cool, whatever, he's a little fucking cunt. That's exactly what he did. When Shayma went up there and sucked that dude's dick, and she came back with the thing on her pussy.
Yeah.
That's what
he's calling right now.
No, he's not calling. He knows better than to call my fucking number. You know, Rogan still talks to him and Ari. I don't give a fuck. I don't talk to those fucking people. So that's how I feel about Tommy and fucking... And I'll have Tommy lick my ass while Caparulo's sucking my fucking pipe. How's that for you? That's what I think about the Comedy Star and Tommy and all that shit. If they rebut on me, I'll knock them both the fuck out. How's that one? Because Caparulo, I can't wait to get my hands on that dumb motherfucker. I want him to make a mistake and say something about me. And there's another motherfuckers on the list, too. I'm coming out like Gotti in fucking 85. It's time. It's time. It's time. So that's how we're going to end today's fucking podcast. What do you got for me, Lee Syatt? Bad motherfucker, you.
Just the stuff, just the awesome people at Hulu Plus. Now that the show's over, don't forget to sign up for your free trial of Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Support this podcast and get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus when you go to HuluPlus.com/Joey or JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Hulu Plus banner. And also, don't forget to sign up for DollarShaveClub.com. You'll get high-quality razors sent to your door each and every month for a fraction of what you pay at retail. We love these guys, and you will too. Now go to DollarShaveClub.com/church, or just go to JoeyDiaz.net and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner.
Most importantly, have a great fucking day, and tell them all to suck your dick. Stay black. Hit it, Lee!
Oh, shit. The song went away. You fucking broke Black Sabbath.